at work. So yeah. They don't have to do it just yet, but it's fine. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, just
And then we'll introduce you. Welcome to Practical Access. I'm Lisa Dieker.
and I'm Rebecca Hines. And Lisa, I know we're both very excited about today's guest. Who do we have?
So today we have with us Dave Stewart Jr. Dave, thank you for joining us. We're so excited to have you.
So glad to be here, Lisa and Rebecca. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Dave, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you do on a daily basis for our listeners so they'll be as excited as we are about having an authentic in the classroom teacher with us?
Sure, I'm a high school teacher. I've taught English and history to students for about almost 20 years now, and I also write articles and books for teachers to try to help folks like me to just focus in our work. Not get upset and stressed out about the latest and greatest, but instead just dial in on the central purposes of this job of being a classroom teacher.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons we reached out to you. I was telling you in our pre-podcast conversation, I read your article, ChatGPT ain't nothing but a chicken wing. And then you kind of go through this journey. And so we thought that would be a fun beginning discussion for you to kind of share. I think you said to me it's not the be all end all, but what are some fun things you're finding that's helpful, but still not what you said so beautifully, crushing the creativity of your kids and some of the new AI tools that are coming out?
Yeah, I think that this ChatGPT is a very interesting and novel technology that's certainly going to change many jobs that our students are going to have, and it's going to change mine. So initially, I was a bit stressed out about it, but as I started to experiment with its use in the classroom, I just realized that there's some applications that I can bring tools like ChatGPT in, like brainstorming, or just my students can practice debating with the AI, on a topic in class. I'll do that once in a while, but mostly my students are just going to be writing in a spiral notebook. They're going to be having in-class verbal discussions. And so this fear that I sensed of teachers being afraid that students are just always going to cheat with this tool, or like it's going to take over everything, I've just not found that to be the case. When we want to use it, when we have an intentional use for it, okay, great. But when I want my students doing their own thinking, that's very simple to facilitate with a good old-fashioned spiral notebook.
I love the range.
Yeah, and I love the reference to the spiral notebook. I will say, I do a lot with ChatGPT and similar tools, and I'm also a former English teacher, so I've kind of looked at this from a similar perspective as you. But here's one thing to note to all of our listeners. The research does show that handwriting, literally physically handwriting, does increase retention.
Right.
Now, since Lisa and I both, we're in the field of disability, and what we know is that we've over-relied sometimes on handwriting. So, first of all, Dave, I really appreciate you mentioning the spiral notebook and maybe tools like this, AI that's available does help us marry things in a way of, yeah, meaningfully writing things down by hand to take notes about something you might read on the screen, or to think critically about, a response, write the five most important words that ChatGPT gave you, and then expand on that yourself. I think there's a lot of creative things that kids can do, and certainly it's a good tool for kids with disabilities. Tell us, since you're in the field right now, what do you see your colleagues worrying about with this type of tool?
Well, they're just very concerned that students won't do writing assignments on their own. I mean, it's a huge concern in the English language arts with students using the device to write their essays for them. That's a concern there. With my math colleagues, they're worried about students just typing the problem into the to ChatGPT, and ChatGPT spits out an answer with the work shown. Or some tools allow the You just take a picture of the math problem in the textbook,
Right.
it'll spit it out. So, people just are worried about students not doing the work of learning, basically, just turning things in that they haven't actually worked to create. And that's certainly a valid concern, because learning doesn't happen if we don't do anything, right? But then again, these have been problems since I was in high school decades ago. You couldn't use
Right.
Chat GPT, but you could use a smart friend. You could use a, an upperclassman who had taken the class before. So it's not like cheating has all of a sudden been made possible. And these are conversations that we teachers need to have with our students again and again. What is all this work for? Why do we do things like write essays? Why do we do practice problems at home? And then we need to just accept that if our students don't understand and have their own why for why to do work, to do the work of learning, then ChatGPT or no, they'll likely find ways to shortcut the process to the detriment of their learning.
Yeah. And do you feel like do you feel like there needs to be a bit of a shift in how teachers see their own roles? I know in your blog, I feel like you alluded a little bit to some of the things that I often think about. It is this idea of coaching kids and really helping them to understand how to use any new tools that come up to meet their own goals, to meet their career goals, et cetera.
And really to teachers, all of us, all subject areas need to be think of ourselves as coaches for our students of how learning just works. How do you acquire skill? How do you gain the ability to think critically, to solve problems, to convince someone of an argument? The tool that's available to us now, ChatGPT, it could potentially be a useful assistant in this journey, but at the end of the day, it's me who has to put forth the argumentation. It's me who needs to perform in the actual arena of whatever I'm trying to do, whether it's an interpersonal relationship or something related to a professional conversation. Until that ChatGPT is like controlling my mouth and actually saying my words for me, I still need to build this. And so all my students, and I say this to them all the time, like you still are ultimately just going to have this. Like this is what's going to be with you every day for the rest of your life. And so how do we build that? What and this, I'm pointing at my mind here. I know that we're
I
just
get
audio. Like how do I strengthen that? How do I strengthen my mind? I need to be talking to my students about that all the time, coaching them all the time about how to do that well.
I think one of the things I see in visiting schools and classrooms, I've just spent 4 days out in schools and, the executive functioning and the motivation of kids. And I know you have a book, The Will to Learn, that you just put out in May, about kids' motivation. And as a person who I have a son who has Tourette's and dysgraphia and the ability to write is hard. How do you help kids get the will to learn in your English class? What as a teacher should I be doing besides pleading, begging, getting them started? What are some things that you found really to get kids to have that will to learn in those language arts classes?
Well, I break it down into five beliefs. The first of which is credibility. So we need to start with, does this student believe that I actually care about them as a learner? Genuinely care about who they are, what they're trying to do. And so there's certain things we can do that cultivate credibility. The next is value. Am I helping students to actually value this work? How do I help them to do that? And sometimes it's me saying why English is important. Other times, though, it's asking them. Let's say someone comes in there and they say, you're never gonna have to write, never gonna have discussions about novels. English class is pointless. What would you say to them? What would you say to them to argue back? What could you say? I can ask my students things like this once in a while, and it'll get them coming up with for themselves why this class is valuable. So that's really what that book focuses on. It focuses on cultivating each of five key beliefs using very simple, doable, sustainable methods as a teacher.
And do you think, as an English teacher, we do focus on writing, often. Do you think that AI and other types of tools like this call for us to broaden our thinking about writing as communication, and possibly expand the field to think more broadly about other forms of communication than just writing?
Well, absolutely. I think like speaking is a forgotten language art. Eric Palmer, who wrote the book
Right.
Well Spoken, he's the first person I heard say that, and I believe he's absolutely correct. I think overall though, with writing, we're just gonna have to reconceptualize what's writing for, because
Right.
now if I can, ask ChatGPT to write a cover letter for my resume, and I can feed it the resume. Well, I guess maybe the cover letter task is taken care of. But the task of performing well in that job interview will not be taken care of. And oftentimes your cover letter, writing that cover letter, it's going to make you much sharper in the interview. You know what I mean? Because this purpose of writing as a tool to make me think sharper and more clearly, that purpose remains even in a ChatGPT world. And so I think that this is where English classes have to go. We have to start to communicate with our students about, well, why do we write all these essays anyways? What is the point of this? I mean, you're not going to do this in the real world. No, but you're going to think in the real world. You're going to need to be able to clarify the fog of thought into something that can be communicated to another human being. You yourself are going to need to be capable of doing that. And so writing is, in my experience, the best, most reliable way to improve the capability that I have to think. And ChatGPT won't fix, it won't ever help me to think better unless I'm, really engaging with what ChatGPT is giving me back. And, I'm really pushing myself with ChatGPT. And that's hard to do because ChatGPT it just feels very easy, feels very magical. And it can kind of lull the mind into a passive role. That's perfect for some things that are really monotonous and
Right.
boring, a cover letter. Well, when you're applying for a bunch of jobs, it is kind of monotonous to write all these different cover letters. So I could see that being a useful tool, but I'd want to make sure that I was really practicing a lot of interview questions just myself, writing out answers to interview questions myself, practicing answering those in the mirror, those types of things, so that I could do well in the interview, because ChatGPT won't help you do that.
So imagine for a minute, Dave, that you're a brand new first-year teacher coming out of University of Kansas, University of Central Florida, and you're going to teach ninth grade language arts.
Yeah.
What would be your go-to in the first week of the job to do, and the thing to be sure you don't do? I'm kind of curious what you would share. And it doesn't have to be tech related. I'm just curious where you'd be
Yeah.
like, make sure you do this and just don't do this.
Yeah, I mean, what I would not do is spend the whole first week on just sort of content agnostic relationship building. Get into what the class is about. Give your students a taste of the learning that you have on offer here. This is a common trap that teachers can fall into, even experienced teachers. And I think relationships are best built on the journey of learning, versus this kind of artificial pre-learning relationship building. So I'd caution with that. The thing to do, I would say, is just learn every kid's name in that first week. It's as a secondary teacher, that's actually kind of hard to do. But it's possible, and it kind of trains you to really pay attention to the individuals. To the individuality of your students, that's going to help you become credible faster.
Yeah, one thing that I know I recommended in an earlier podcast, the teacher said to me, is she has all the kids do a Flipgrid so she can take it home at night and remind her who they are, as, hi, I'm Lisa and I like cats or whatever. But
Great
I agree
idea.
with that. I think it's really important, but you're right, as a secondary teacher, it's really hard. So that's a great tip.
Yeah, what a great activity for the first week, right? Because you get the
Yeah.
faces, you get the voice, some mannerisms, something about them. So I might actually steal that.
Okay. Yeah, came
thanks,
from another
Lisa.
listener, so thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then my final question for you, Dave, is similarly, if you were to tell a new teacher, Here's what I recommend for your very first writing prompt that first week. Like, what's a specific, what's something, because you've really articulated well this need to kind of capture your audience and demonstrate that you care, and all of these things. But it's hard for a lot of people to strike that balance early on. What do you assign
I
for
mean,
that very first prompt?
I often like to ask secondary students right out of the gate, tell me about the kind of person you want to be in 10 years. You know, describe the kind of person. So not necessarily the job, but what do you want to be like as a human being? And I can use this to get a sense of the students' values, and also I can use this to remind them as we go through the journey of the semester. Hey, just remember, you know, you don't become, you know, dependable just magically. You don't become hardworking just magically. It's by working hard. It's by coming through when things are difficult. Like those character attributes are built through situations that challenge them. So that's a nice that's like a nice beginning of the like first day even writing assignment that I like to give my students.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, so any last words of wisdom from the language arts field that you just want to share in general? Like my favorite thing to do, my favorite activity to wrap up this short, quick podcast. It's been very informative.
I just think that the biggest thing on my heart for early career teachers right now is that this still is a beautiful career. I think there's going to be people starting the exact time you're starting, and they're going to retire in 30 years. They're going to look back on a well spent career, and that could be you. It's going to be difficult, but it was difficult for people 30 years ago as well. So don't believe all the hype that education is like kind of uniquely hard now in a way that it's never been before. It's absolutely difficult, but I think education's always been a difficult endeavor in human history. So hang in there.
But a lot of rewarding, it sounds like. Well, kids are lucky to have you. We are lucky to have had you on our podcast, and we really appreciate your words to wisdom. And keep up your blogs; they're really fun, and I love following your thinking and your great words. If you have questions for us, you can tweet us at Access Practical, or you can post a question on our Facebook page. Thank you again, Dave.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Dave. We'll let you stop recording.